Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. I am joined tonight by James Fox. How are you, James?
Good, sir. How are you? I'm taking a break from watching punter highlights, so this should be fun.
Lord. So the White Sox swept the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, they're not very good.
No. Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you have, you know, 10 of your starting guys injured. That probably doesn't help things.
Yeah, but I mean, guys that they have like counted on in the past that like aren't as good as like they were initially too is an issue. And the whole like Gross Wander Franco thing, like they kind of needed him, right? So yeah, they're not great. I mean, they're not that terrible though, but you know, but it's like the American League, they might be in some trouble.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, Tommy Pham comes up, and you can call it a coincidence. I don't know, but they are playing a lot better. And I mean, another thing with the Rays is if they have guys on base, like generally they always have guys on base. And that was not the case in this series and hasn't been the case for them so far this year. And I would say it's probably largely due to the injuries.
Yeah, it seems like it. And Eric Fetty's good. I don't know. Is that a pleasant surprise? I actually kind of expected him to be decent. But he's pretty good.
Yeah. I expected him to be fairly decent. I wasn't expecting almost a complete game today, certainly. Yeah. So I figured, you know, the fact that they had won the first two games, I kind of assumed that he was going to probably be the guy who had to blow up just simply because the percentages with the way this team has played. And turns out not so much.
Yeah. So, and not everybody's having the luck. Eric Fetty is obviously. Mike Soroka's been challenged a little bit. And obviously there's some other, like moves in the starting rotation that we'll get into just with like a couple of the young guys being up and down and two veterans that it looks like will soon be in the starting rotation.
Yep. So to answer your question here, Drew, this week's selection is the Defenders of the Diamond for the Winston-Salem Dash from last year. I don't know if they're going to wear it this year or not. I kind of think that they are done with the Defenders of the Diamond, but I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Did you get the hyphen one?
I have the hyphens. Yeah, I got that one. Oh, the hyphens.
Hyphens. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that one. No,
that's from this year, right? Yeah.
Yeah, my issue with that one is that it's like Flintstone orange and turquoise. Yeah, and that's just like it totally doesn't go with my lifestyle here. I can't do it.
Yeah, the orange and turquoise is a little weird.
Yeah, I do have the tobacco beetles. I have that one on order, and I think it's coming in like July or something. And there is going to be a third theme night that's getting announced for the Dash in the next couple of weeks or so. And we'll see what that one looks like. So, yeah, the fan base is kind of up at arms about the Cannon and Nastrini thing and the way that this has been handled. You have Brad Keller has made his way up to the White Sox. And this is kind of like what I wanted to get into big time in this particular episode was the way that the White Sox front office is going about who they want on this team and whether it's a good idea to call guys up to this team. And how many veterans you want on this team as well. How do you feel about the Nastrini and Cannon thing? Knowing full well that they did sign Clevinger and Brad Keller, probably with the idea of having them on the major league roster for most of the year.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to start Crochet every 5 days, I mean, the only option was, like, I guess, punting on the Soroka like experiment, and it doesn't seem like they're ready to do that. And then Fetty's good, so yeah, I mean, they're gonna take the young guys' rotation spots. Like, it's not great. Like, I think the fan base would like to see those guys start every 5 days. I don't really think it's that big of a deal, because like, as long as they're pitching every 5 days somewhere, it's fine. I think they're probably pitching a ton in the second half regardless. I don't know that you're getting a ton in trade for Brad Keller or Mike Clevenger, but I mean, there has to be some reason for like why they think they need this many bad veterans on this team. I don't really get it, but I also don't think, I don't know. I don't know that Nick Mastrini like needs to be in Chicago, like, to work on the things that he needs to work on. Jonathan Cannon's a little bit of a different story, because I think Jonathan Cannon kind of is what he is at this, you know, at this point. So I feel like if you wanted to keep him up, I would have understood that. But I mean, you know, I mean, there's other, like, you can argue that Jared Schuster should be starting. I mean, what's the point of this whole thing, right? Like, I don't know why there's any of these veterans. So I do think, and we talked about this a little bit off air, by July 15th or so, like late July, I don't know if they have much to trade. But I do think the second half of the year, it's going to be all prospects playing for the most part.
Yeah, off air before stream started, we had a talk about Tommy Pham and the fact that he's here, but also about the fact that Rafael Ortega is with the White Sox, and they sent Dominic Fletcher down. Now, I understand if the White Sox feel that they need to get Dom Fletcher a mental reset, but the not bringing up Oscar Colas thing, maybe they are sticking to their guns about needing to get him significant time in AAA before bringing him back up.
Yeah, the Ortega part I don't really understand. I mean, I think the other part of this, like, you signed Pham, so he was definitely going to come up to play pretty much every day, I feel like. And Dominic Fletcher hasn't been good enough, obviously. So, look, I think him going to Charlotte's, like, not that big a deal. I just don't know why we need to see Rafael Ortega. Like, it doesn't, you know, that doesn't really make sense to me. I would rather have Colas on the team. The manager doesn't like him, but, like, you know what? Like, I don't really like the manager. So, you know, like, that should be, like, I don't know why, like, that, like, you know, weighs as heavily as it does. So, I don't know. The some of the roster moves have been very strange, like, lately.
Yeah, clearly the team's not going anywhere. I mean, the sweep aside, and I know that the White Sox are back after this weekend, but I mean, we're all pretty much in agreement that this team's going nowhere, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that fact. Whether they will end up finishing worse than the Cleveland Spiders, probably not. But you know, they're on pace to be very, very, very bad. So what is the, I guess, like, what's the problem with letting some of the young guys play? You know, when it comes to the guys that you specifically traded for, like a Dominic Fletcher, like Oscar Colas, who, you know, yeah, he's done some dumb things up here to, you know, enough to piss off Pedro that he threw him under the bus last year. But why not at least get him at bats up here and get him comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would argue that they're like trying to win baseball games, right? I mean, I think we think that doesn't make any sense, obviously. I think that's what they would say. I mean, I know Getz kind of talked yesterday, and it seemed to be like full steam ahead rebuild. But then you look at the lineup and the roster, and it's made up of like veterans on their last legs and, you know, guys like Tommy Pham. I mean, like, Tommy Pham's not bad. Like, I'm surprised Tommy Pham's not on a contender. Like, teams are stupid. You know, he's like a solid guy to have around. I mean, he was on the Diamondbacks last year late, right? So, or was he on Texas? Where was he at late last year? Yeah, I mean, he was on a playoff team. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, that guy should have probably been signed sooner. I mean, he's good. Like, this isn't like that much of a surprise. He's like an above average big league hitter.
He's at least very useful.
Yeah, even if like if you least. Yeah, for sure. Like if you played him against just lefties, like he'd be like really good, and if he plays all the time, then you know whatever. So I don't know. It's very, very strange. I personally like I don't think Getz cares if they lose 110. Pedro probably does, but like Pedro's probably gone anyway. So this is the first time I've brought this up, but like I heard like from some people close to the team, like there was a name that some beat guys were like bandying about like for the next manager, and it's an outside hire, and it's really funny like thinking about it right now, that like the name mentioned was Skip Schumacher once he gets fired from Miami, and that the Marlins are like the only team worse than the White Sox are. So that's you know, that fits, but he knows Tony La Russa, so
yeah. That's, I mean, that is a big qualifier for this team, is to know one of the two people that have the most sway in the hiring process.
Yeah, Jerry, I think Jerry has heard of Skip Schumacher before. So,
I mean, you know, I'm sure Skip Schumacher knows David Eckstein somehow.
Yeah,
and so he's his favorite. So,
yeah, it's pretty bad.
So one thing that also happened this week is that Kevin Pillar, one of your clubhouse leaders that you went out of your way to sign over the over the offseason, he's also DFA'd. And I mean the weird thing is that over the last 10 games, I think he had the highest OPS out of all the outfielders. So kind of, you know, not that he was any good, but why keep Robbie Grossman and get rid of Pillar when Robbie Grossman isn't doing much of anything? Just a thought.
Well, yeah, and Pillar can at least play center field, you know? Like
he can at least play defensively at all.
Yeah. And nobody's picked up Pillar yet, right?
Not that I know of.
I think we're about to find out why he was like as cheap as he was, because I think he's, you know, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it's going to be like a lot of these guys like getting their opportunity, like Rafael Ortega. But the thing with Ortega is he's like another lefty, you know? So I feel like he's a pinch hit role. I don't know. All these guys like seem pretty much the same to me, and none of them really matter very much, which like kind of sucks when you're going to lose 100 games.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, personally, I don't think Tommy Pham's going to bring you back a real prospect. I mean, you know, like a flyer for sure.
Yeah, maybe like a high A reliever or like a far away Dominican type guy.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought.
But I mean, there were a couple of guys who I thought like it was trending towards like Steven Wilson, like bringing something back, and he's struggled a little bit. You know, I do think John Brebbia is pretty solid to the point where like, come deadline time, those guys are going to move for sure. I just don't know that you're going to get anything. And then they'll trade Kopech if they can. I think they would like to be done with having to worry about that. And then if Aloy's good, he's probably as good as gone too. I think the big question is Fetty. Like Clutch Hattrick brought that up like in our stream. Like to me, like I think it all depends on how quickly you think that you can compete in the Central, right? Like I think if you can compete by 2026, like I might try to extend that guy and keep him here personally, like if he's like looking this good, because like you'll get something for him, but like I don't know that you'll get enough to justify just like not having him pitch for you next year. Like he's
yeah,
pretty solid, so I'd probably keep him unless it's like something crazy.
Yeah, that's my thought as well, is that if you have to have somebody pitch for you next year. And if you want to win more than you do this year, you want to have more wins than you will get this season. It makes sense to try and at least keep some of these guys around, at least some of the guys that are actually talented. Trading literally everybody off the team just says, hey, we're still rebuilding and trying to tear down to the studs and, you know, trying to get back into the lottery, which we can't, you know, so yeah. Bad idea. So with the only part of Andrew Vaughn's game being his he's consistently inconsistent. At what point do the White Sox finally just let Gavin Sheets play first base and send Andrew Vaughn down? Do they just completely blow off that idea and not even consider it, or is that something that they're talking about?
I mean, I haven't heard. I don't know. I mean, I would have sent him down already. I don't know what they're really waiting for, because he doesn't seem like he's coming out of it. He's like not hitting for any power at all. I don't get it. I understand like the people that wanted more upside, like with that pick. I was one of them. I didn't love like the college heavy approach taking a first baseman, but there was nobody that thought he wasn't going to hit. It was just one of those things where like, okay, he's going to play first. I don't know how much power he's going to have, but he's going to be like an 800 OPS guy playing first. And he is just awful. Right. So nobody thought this. I usually like follow Keith Law's like hitting recommendations pretty closely, and he thought he was going to be a stud. Everybody did. I don't know if it has anything to do with the White Sox like rushing him through the pandemic years and him not playing in the minors, or if this would have happened regardless. Like, I don't really know. But this is definitely too much. And if you want to salvage anything, like, I do think like sending down, see if like what that does for his confidence, anything like that. And just play Sheets, because like it doesn't really matter that much. I mean, you could play Grossman at first against lefties if you wanted to. Like, it doesn't matter really that much. But if you think Andrew Vaughn is important and he might matter, like, I don't know why they wouldn't like try something instead of what they're currently doing.
I mean, Sheets, not that I'm really saying that he's doing anything spectacular, but he is leading the team in OPS. At least the only qualified guy out of like the three qualified guys or whatever it is that they have in OPS. He's leading the team, and he's got double what Andrew Vaughn's got. So that right there should tell you Andrew Vaughn's doing really bad. And, you know, I know that you're going out of your way to not watch the White Sox. I put them on my side TV. So, you know, like, I'm sitting here doing all the minor league games. Mm-hmm. But I've got the White Sox on the normal TV. And the other day, Steve Stone was talking about how Andrew Vaughn's been hitting the ball hard, and he's looking like he's going to come out of his slump. No, he does not. He's just hitting it hard right at people. So I don't see it personally. I think that they should send him down and hopefully get him some success somewhere. Because it hasn't been happening here.
No, it's not good.
Consistently.
When you see like Andrew Benintendi's back, huh? I saw that this weekend. Like,
for two games.
South Side Stand Up, baby.
South Side Stand Up.
I saw that part of the games. I listened to the John Schriffen call.
A lot of people like it.
So that dude is in a tough spot, man. Like, I like the enthusiasm. I think that was a really cool, really good call. Until like the haters part, I could do without that. Like, shut up the haters thing or whatever. That's kind of lame. And I don't know about Southside Stand Up. If they walk somebody off on the road, is he gonna say Southside Stand Up, or like what's his call like for a road game? I guess you can't walk somebody off in the road, but like.
True.
Like, what's it like? Does he do it for win? Is he going to do it for every win? Like, I don't know. The whole thing is, but he's very enthusiastic, and he might be pretty good if they ever get good again.
Yeah, the home run call was a lot of fun, I thought. So, I don't know. People are going to be mad about it. You know, just let him be excited. He's excited to have his first Major League Baseball job. It is what it is, you know?
Somebody in that booth's got to be excited, right?
Yeah, it's certainly not Steve Stone.
Yeah.
So, so something that I brought up to you earlier this week that I wanted to talk about here was, you have a bunch of the top prospects, and it was brought up earlier in the comments about Colson Montgomery coming up, and you say what you want about where he is in his development path. I don't think he's ready. Probably most people don't think he's ready. But how do you bring up a prospect, one of your top prospects, to a team that is playing like this with a manager like this, how do you bring him up with any confidence that you're going to be able to develop him properly in an atmosphere like this?
Yeah, like on the hitting side, I'm not sure that they will. I think a lot depends on like how they feel about Marcus Thames. I don't know anything about Marcus Thames. I mean, he might be fine and the players are all bad. I don't know. Like the blame the hitting coach thing is always kind of like rings hollow with me. But like, yeah, I mean, if you trust your infrastructure, it's fine. I don't know that they have anybody like ready to come up. Like, you know, Chris Getz said yesterday that, I think it was Paul Janish with James Fegan that said that they wouldn't be afraid to like call somebody up from double. I saw that part. Okay, fine. Like, but I just, you know, like Ramos hasn't played well enough to come up. Colson Montgomery is not ready to come up. So, I mean, other than that, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how if anybody else matters that much. I mean, even like Brooks Baldwin was just shown, right? Like, yeah, maybe like in a meteoric rise, like a Romy Gonzalez, like it could be Brooks Baldwin. But like, what's the point of that? Like, just, I don't know. You're going to add him to the 40 man prematurely to like, let him play for this team. Like for what reason? Like, I don't really get it. Like, I feel like I would leave all these guys down unless it's somebody like, you know, kicking the door down, like screaming. Right. You know, I mean, like if Tim Elko were ready or something, like, sure. But like, we're not even really at that stage yet either necessarily. So
yeah,
it's a good question. I think like the really good ones, like, I don't think it would matter. I think they would just come up and be fine. I just don't know that they have like anybody that's like ready anyway. And look, by the time they're like, Pedro could get fired by the time like that happens anyway. I don't know. Who knows? Like, they go on another, you know, I mean, at any point this team could lose 13 to 15. So, you know, again, minus like what happened this weekend.
Yeah, I'd say probably, you know, the older guys, like you said, like Tim Elko, guys that have been through a full, an entire 5-year career in college, you know, where they're redshirting or the 2020 season, you know, whatever. Guys like that, yeah, I could see them moving quickly, but those are not going to be the guys that people are really, really clamoring for. I mean, obviously, if Tim Elko was, you know, hitting like 10 home runs like Heston Kjerstad, people would be calling for him to be called up, but that hasn't happened. He's hitting 250 and he's been hitting mostly singles as of late and a couple of doubles, you know. It hasn't really, the power really hasn't manifested itself in double A so far. That said, the rest of the team is hitting the ball all over the place. Not even that many home runs, just hitting the ball all over the place and scoring runs. And he hasn't needed to. So, you know, the guy that everybody's been seeing highlights of over the last, you know, 2 weeks has been Brooks Baldwin. He's been great. You know, he had a day off today, so nothing. I think he went 0-for-4 yesterday. But, you know, I don't really see too many guys that I'm like, we need to send this guy up to Chicago right away. I don't see him right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more obviously on the pitching side where a lot of good stuff is happening, and you know, you do have some guys on your 40 man. Like, we've seen Nick Nastrini, we've seen Jonathan Cannon, obviously. Like Drew Thorpe, Jairo Iriarte are both on the 40, but they're both in Double A. So I don't know. We could see, I think, Thorpe basically whenever. Like, if Thorpe is the type of thing where it's, I don't know, 5-6 more starts in Double A and then straight to the majors, I would understand that maybe more than some of the other guys. Kai Bush looks really good. We were talking about him like before we started. Jake Eater's stuff looks pretty good, but it's still a lot of walks, but it's been a little bit promising. And I mean, those are basically the guys. And then you have Jared Schuster, but you have a lot of like high minors pitching that could be ready. You know, I didn't mention Mason Adams. Like, he could probably, you know, you could make the argument for him too, I would say. I feel like we talk about Davis Martin sometimes on the comeback trail. So yeah, I think there's a lot of guys that we're going to see. I don't know how many like offensive contributors we're going to see.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, is that I feel like the guys that you would feel confident in enough to bring them up, it's going to be pitchers. And I know that the argument goes is that there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Either you get people out or you don't. But I mean, obviously there is a degree to the, you know, talent that you're getting out, which is the question. So, yeah, I'm saying it's going to be pitching this year until like maybe August or September.
Yeah, and you really need Ramos to kind of snap out of it a little bit, because like if he does start hitting and double, I would imagine the promotion to Charlotte happens like pretty quickly, and then you know maybe we see him at some point, right? So, but Colson, no, Colson needs time. I don't really know what the Edgar Carroll plan is. You know, like I don't know. You know, like do they? Like, has he conquered double A? I don't know, you know, but he also needs every day playing time in Charlotte if that's what they like decided to do. So, but I do feel a lot better about that one right now. Edgar Caro, in his second go round at double A, looks pretty good.
Yeah, he's, you know, I don't know. I'd have to look, but he's got like an on base streak going, I believe, and Dosakis. Yeah, I don't think the most interesting man in the world is breaking our door down to give us sponsorships. I mean, possibly, you never know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's a bunch of guys in Birmingham that are hitting the crap out of the ball. They went 5-1 this week. They're first place in the division in the Southern League. They're real good. In fact, you know, I posted about it earlier today, is that the Cannonballers, the Dash, and the Knights all went 4-2 this week, and Birmingham went 5-1. So it's actually being, it's actually exciting to follow them, which the last couple of years, it has not been good. So seeing the teams actually taking steps to win is very nice. And it's on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been pretty good. And then just some performances like in Winston too. Jacob Gonzalez hasn't hit for much power at all, but he's holding his own for the most part. It's like a 125 WRC plus, I think pretty good defense at short. He walks a ton. That's kind of the calling card there. Obviously they have Noah Schultz there, gave up some runs this weekend, but looks mostly fine, you know? So, you know, he's still basically throwing four innings a start. So, you know, you do the math there, what he makes 20 starts, he'll be at like 80 innings for the year. So, which is, you know, I think they wanted between 75 and 100. So we'll see how many starts he makes.
Yeah. I think the Noah Schultz start, he gave up a home run and
there's a wall scraper too, right? Like, yeah,
it hit the top of the wall and bounced out, and he basically provided all of the power.
Yeah.
It was a outside slider. The guy got fooled on it, just happened to catch the perfect barrel. And I don't know if the wind was blowing out or whatever, but the thing just kept on going and kept on going, and it just bounced right on top of the wall. It's garbage home run, but you know, it happens. So, he didn't seem bothered by it. So I'm not bothered by it. You know, it's not one of those things where it's going to hurt my feelings that he gets a home run hit on him every once in a while, especially on a cheapie when he fools the guy, you know?
For sure. Yep. And we did have, some debuts this week, right? Calvin Harris, Eddie Park has returned. I think Shane Murphy pitched like in a piggyback role in relief. So
yeah, he pitched guys that, one inning behind Schultz. Yeah.
Yeah. Some guys that hadn't played or pitched previously, you know, and then next weekend we have the start of the rookie league season in Arizona, and there's some names on that team. So,
yeah, I'm waiting to see the full roster and everything. I know that we have like guys that we assume are going to be there, but see the actual real roster will be nice. Let's see here. Oh, Pilar reported to have elected free agency, which I kind of figured he was going to do as well. I don't think he'd want to stick around here, especially after that emotional speech a couple weeks back about how he didn't know what was going to happen with the rest of his life when the White Sox let him walk. So,
yeah, I didn't think he was going to be spending much time in Charlotte. So,
me either. I had something in mind and I completely forgot.
Yeah, it's okay. So. With the Arizona League, Grant Taylor's there, looks awesome apparently from everything I've heard looks really good. I don't know how long he'll be there. I mean, like Paulette, it's not totally the Paulette plan, right? Because Paulette was with Canny all year last year for the most part. So if he's going to pitch some in Arizona, my guess is then he'll just finish his year in Canny, and then that's fine, I think, for this year. There's like a couple other pitchers there that were drafted last year. I saw some reports on Twitter about Maximo Martinez, who was the second pitcher acquired in the Dodgers trade for international slot money last year, along with Aldrin Bautista. So he throws really hard, but he's never made it out of the complex league. He's still there, and then we'll get our highlights from last year's DSL class and George Wolkow and whoever else they decide to send to Arizona. But so we'll have another affiliate starting within a week here.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the hardest thing about the Arizona Complex League is that it's not televised. It's not streamed. It's not anything. We just see a box score. And what I always say is that I need to get my eyes on a guy. I can't sit here and look at these box scores. And obviously, you look at the guys that are hitting, like 500 or something. Yeah, clearly he's having a pretty good time down there. But, seeing the intricacies of what's going on, how the at-bats are going, how they're striking out, if they're striking out, how they're hitting the ball, like none of that shows up in the box scores at all. And I'm sure that somewhere there's some place that, there's a hidden vault that Major League Baseball keeps that has all of the TrackMan numbers that they can't let everybody else see for whatever reason.
Yeah. Right.
Obviously look forward to that season. And we'll see how quickly these guys get promoted. I mean, some of these guys could only be there for a couple of weeks. Some of them might be there the entire time and stick there until next year. It's kind of a crapshoot. So,
yeah, and that season ends like so early that I feel like they're all going to Canny at some point, right? Like even like your Christian Opper was a fifth rounder last year, Matthias Lacombe in the 12th. It's very easy for those guys to start and get innings in Arizona. And then if they're not at their innings limit or whatever, you just send them to Kannapolis after the draft and let them finish there since that Arizona season kind of ends so soon. But like, yeah, you were talking about the numbers there. I mean, I've been looking at Dominican Summer League numbers for years, right? And like sometimes they're really hard to interpret or decipher, however you want to say, like sometimes like guys hit like crazy and they turn into Jose Rodriguez and turn into a real prospect. And sometimes they're Benjamin Bailey, like it's just where they get stateside and they're just overwhelmed completely. So it's one of the big things that I'm looking for with Javier Mogollon. He's got a lot of helium, and even he looks good in Arizona in extended spring games, right? But that doesn't mean he's going to hit when he gets to Kannapolis. Like we've seen this story before. So, but that guy, everybody decided to rank him for a reason, like all the big publications did. So he definitely is a guy like on that team to watch. You generally know pretty quickly though, like if it's, oh boy, like if it's like really hard, it's totally different.
Yeah. The reason why I personally ranked Mogollon was because talking to Andy Barquette, he talked about Mogollon and said that, super solid approach and fundamentally sound, which is, like the kind of things that I like to hear, so.
Well, it's real. So it's like real power, right? So the DSL, like real power, loud stuff, strikeouts, like all things that are very important. Like I love minor league walk rates, but there, like it's kind of overblown because the pitching's so bad that like even guys that never do anything have over 10% walk rates, because if you just stand there and take pitches, like, the pitching's really, really bad. So
terrible.
Yeah, like, it's terrible. It's not good. I remember when, like, the grainy video of Luis Robert playing in the Dominican Summer League for no reason. I mean, tax reasons, but, like, it was kind of pointless. And then even, like, I asked the Bill Mitchells of the world and the Jim Callises about Loidel Chapey, you know, because it's like, well, how do we rank this guy? Like, what do we even do, you know? Because it's like, he was really good down there as a 18-year-old or whatever he was, like, signing. Like, yeah, but he should be awesome down there, you know? Like, it's like he's playing against children on dirt fields.
I mean, yeah, no, that's fair. But I mean, you know, he's about as tall as those children. Yes, so it works out.
Yeah. I always picture, like, Kramer doing the jujitsu with the kids in Seinfeld. Like, that's, yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to bring this up. See, here's the thing.
Drew programs our show for us. This is good.
He says, let the kids stay in the minors as long as possible. Earliest for Edgar, Thorpe, and the other pitchers, 2026, Colson in 2025. I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you there, Bob. Like, the whole thing is that development isn't linear. We have no idea when one of these guys isn't going to pop off and, you know, like, for a month straight, just absolutely murder the ball and show that they're ready to move on. You know, we have no idea when that's going to happen. So pushing it off for 2 years, let alone till next year, you know, that's something altogether. You know, I mean, I would think that, you know, if Colson over the next month and a half, say he starts hitting 400 in AAA, he's coming up this year. Like, they're not going to have him stay down in Charlotte just because of a number.
Yeah.
You know, the year number anyway.
Well, and I'm guessing, like, Drew Thorpe is in the 2025 rotation. So he likely makes starts this year at some point, like, whether that's after they dump the veterans, whatever. Like, my guess is we see Drew Thorpe this year. I think you probably still see Colson too at some point, but not soon. Like, it better not be soon, because he's not ready. And then Edgar Caro is super interesting, right? Like, if you told me that he was their catcher, like, the White Sox catcher by midseason next year, like, I could believe that. That's fine, but catchers do take a while. So, but yeah, I mean, he definitely looks, like, interesting. And then I would add Brian Ramos to the mix too. I mean, obviously it's not a great April. But I mean, he's
up there. He's starting to hit. He's starting to hit. And the defense has looked pretty good. So I think it's just, you know, he's just been going through it. He's in the blender for the first couple of weeks, and now he's starting to hit the ball. He hit his first home run the other night. He's been hitting the ball pretty hard for the last week. Now, that might be because Chattanooga's pitching's buns. I don't know. You know, we'll find out when the next series comes up here. But
he's always hit, though. Like, he has track record to fall back on. Like, what do you think is the White Sox plan for him? Because, like, they sent him back to Double after some success. Like, do you think they just wanted to see similar success and then he goes right to Charlotte, or is there, like, some reason specifically why they prefer Birmingham?
See, I thought about Brian Ramos the same way I thought about Colson Montgomery, and I thought they should both be in Double A. And for whatever reason, they sent Colson to Charlotte to start the season after, you know, some decent success in Birmingham, but nothing sustained. And I felt that Brian Ramos probably had more sustained success than Colson did last year. At least more consistent, you know, from game to game. And he got put in Double A, and I kind of felt that they both belonged in Double A.
Yeah. And if you were to, like, flip them, I thought it would be flip the opposite. I thought Ramos would be in Charlotte and Colson would be in Double, but yeah,
that was my thinking as well.
Pretty aggressive, but it seems like Colson might be able to work himself out of this. I mean, I know you had, I don't know if you took issue with it, but you brought up, like, just the amount of, like, strikeouts looking. I don't know how much he's using the ABS system or any of that. Like,
Colson?
Colson.
He's, like, he's challenged, I think, once.
Yeah.
He won it, but.
Yeah. So he does. I mean, he takes a lot of pitches. So, like, what's is that better than him swinging at everything? I don't know, you know, but it's 34% K rate in AAA. The walk rate's good. So we'll see. We'll see if he can, like, get himself out of, like, this mess that he's basically started with.
Yeah, so here's the thing. We don't know. We're not privy to the information. It's entirely possible. You know, you hear guys come up, and they have them tracking the ball for a while. So, I mean, it could be that they're telling him, hey, you know, until you get into such and such account, we want you to hold on, you know, and not swing at it unless it's exactly in the place that you want it. I don't know. I don't know what they're telling him. I don't know what he's working on. So the numbers, as much as we know, it could be that the numbers aren't even necessarily that important. They're more worried about, like, what he's, you know, his process about the way he's going about things. I don't know. So I don't know. We'll see.
Well, he obviously, like, he did not have trouble in double or the lower minors as far as just, like, taking pitches from bad pitchers and walking, you know, like I always fear, and this is going to scare the hell out of people, but I always fear, like, a Zach Collins situation where it's, you're just, like, never swinging.
Yoan Moncada, same thing.
Yeah, right. But I mean, he has kind of attacked a little bit here, so we'll see. And then I think I haven't heard, like, anything terrible on the defense from him. Like, he's never going to be a great shortstop, but I mean, if he's good enough to play there, like, that enhances the value to the point where, like, maybe he's your shortstop for a bit and then he ultimately moves to third. But I don't think we're at the point where it's like, oh, he's playing third, like many people thought. I think it's short. And then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. So, this has to do with the Colson Montgomery defense discussion here. And I'm just going to go ahead and, bring up this play here just so everybody can see it. Well, at least I was gonna, where is it? Share screen. There we go. Entire screen. There we go. Share. Yeah. What is going on here? Let's go. Oh my gosh. And I guess I'm not going to show it. Anyway, the game in Charlotte, in Lehigh Valley against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs for the Knights. Colson Montgomery took a grounder at short. He was late on the flip to get the third out. Umpire called him out anyway. It was absolutely a terrible call. Go ahead and look it up on our Twitter account. It's pretty funny.
It's because of all the great restaurants in Lehigh Valley. The guy had somewhere to be for sure.
Reservations for him and his significant other, or his guma or whatever. You got anything minor league wise for the week? Anything else pressing?
Yeah. So just thoughts on former second rounder Wes Kath, if he's finally maybe starting to figure something out in his second go round in Winston. I know had some struggles last year for sure, but the swing looks better. It looks more compact, not as long. I think he's always going to be a high strikeout guy. The defense, I think, has been okay, but he's playing pretty well. And that's a guy that was, I think, kind of written off, like, by many.
By most.
Yeah. And I mean, Westcat's only 21 years old still, you know, second round pick. He's got a 138 WRC plus, in high A with four homers. He's walking quite a bit. He's striking out a ton, but I mean, the K rate, it's a 10% decrease on the K rate, right? So, like, he's striking out 33% of the time, but that's better than the 43% of the time that he struck out last year.
Yeah, the swing and miss is a little better this year, and he definitely looks more planted in his lower half in the box. Looks like the approach is a little better as well. So
we'll see. I mean, look, if Westcalf can play third and he hits for low batting averages and, like, with a ton of power, I'm fine with that. Like that, I think that's fine. I think a lot of times what happens is these guys get caught in between and they can't decide what they want to be, right? They want to be like a whole player, and sometimes they can't. It's like the Gavin Sheets stuff that we talk about all the time, right? Like Gavin Sheets is like, you know, not as good as this player, right? But like the style of like the way Mark Grace played, more so than like one of these lefty mashers. And everybody kind of wants him to be a lefty masher because that's like what he needs to be, but it's just not what he's ever been. He's, you know, he's always been a guy that worked counts and like hit a lot of singles and doubles. And then he would, he would get himself in trouble trying to hit for power, I feel like.
Yeah. And the swing looks like kind of similar actually to Mark Grace's. Still got, it's got the same kind of like swing plane as Mark Grace did. So I don't know. Interesting. It's a nice development, that's for sure. Because as you had brought up, so many people had wrote this kid off. Like I get replies on the highlights all the time. Oh, I thought this guy was dead. So it's nice to see him doing some things. And
yeah, I mean, we couldn't, like, we didn't rank him. We can't rank him. You know, like that. That's not. But you know, at least it's also one of the perks of drafting high school guys. Like they're, you know, like Jared Kelly's had his struggles too, right? How old is Jared Kelly? 22, 21. This is like when you draft high school players, like this is what happens. They're not 26 years old, like after a couple of years of struggles.
Yeah. And, you know, Andrew Dahlquist, he's been coming out of the pen this year in Birmingham and he's looked fairly decent as well. He had like two innings after Mason Adams pitched the other day and had four strikeouts in two innings. So, you know, these prep guys that the White Sox have picked up, don't write them off yet because they're still not that old.
Yeah.
So, although Matt Thompson, I think he's still walking a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. And that trade might just be bad for both teams. With Bailey Horn, you know, getting DFA'd this week, there's no resolution on that yet. So we don't really know. You know, the interesting thing, do you know how much like Dahlquist's stuff has played up, if it has, like, cause he's over 11 Ks per nine. You know, he's only thrown in five games out of the bullpen, with a zero ERA. It's lots of walks though. It's eight strikeouts and five walks and six and a third.
I think he's up like a mile or two an hour, probably like more closer to 2 miles an hour.
Yeah.
On his fastball. When he's coming in relief, but you know, I mean, radar guns, who really knows?
Yeah.
You know?
And a guy like him that was basically lauded as like the high floor type with like a four pitch mix. Like, I don't know which pitches like play up in a relief role for an Andrew Dahlquist, right? It's not like, like Jake Eater, right? Like a lot of people talk about Jake Eater, how it's like, oh, this guy stinks. Like it's a failure or whatever. Right. Like, even if the White Sox decided that Jake Eater can't start, he immediately becomes like one of your highest leverage, high upside potential relief pitchers throwing two pitches like out of the bullpen, right? Like Andrew Dahlquist, a guy like Andrew Dahlquist isn't that. Like we've seen the, oh, this guy can't start, just throw your fastball slider. You know, it's like we're seeing Perlander Barreau. It's the same thing. So with Dahlquist types, I don't know. I don't know if that really works, but we'll see. At least he's, you know, he's pitching okay.
At least he's being useful. Like that's the thing, you know, is that we know that when he's starting, same thing with Jared Kelly. We know that when they're starting, they run into issues. I don't know whether it's an anxiety thing, whether it's a fear of failure or in just tightening up or what the issue is. People run into these same things with all sorts of things that they do. Just so happens to be that they do it when they're pitching and when they're starting. If they come in relief and they're useful, then guess what? We have useful relievers, and that is more than nothing. That's the way I look at it. You know, yes, I would like for them to be, you know, the second coming and pitching for the White Sox and being aces. But I mean, it's clearly, you know, it's not going to happen with every single prospect. That's just not how it works. So we get what we get, and we make lemonade, you know, out of lemons. That's what you do. So doesn't, you know, you got to make the best out of what you get. And if it happens to be in a relief role, that works just fine for me. Gives us more arms for all those injuries in the bullpen that you always see every year. So just keep on progressing and keep on getting better, and hopefully we get some useful innings out of him in the major leagues. We'll see.
I guess like the last guy that's like in a similar vein, like Eric Adler pitching in the high A bullpen. I think we could see in double fairly quickly, because I don't really see the point in like him throwing much longer in high A. I mean, it's still over 4 walks per 9, but that, like, I think he's always going to be somebody that struggles with that. But it's 13 Ks per 9. He hasn't really given up any runs on the year. You might as well send him to Birmingham, see what he has, because that's the type of guy where, you know, you're seeing Jordan Leisure, you're seeing Perlander Baroa. Like, if Eric Adler goes to double A and pitches similarly, he could be in the 2025 bullpen. There's no reason for a guy like that not to be.
Yeah, that's where the whole pitching prospects not being a thing comes into play, especially with high leverage relievers that are just blowing guys away in the lower levels of minors. Fast track them, you know. I totally agree with that. You got anything else pressing for the week?
No, I'd like to, get an Arizona roster preview out, like when I have that like official information. I've been sitting on some, you know, the Grant Taylor piece that I wrote. I interviewed him. Great kid. I just kind of wanted to release that in conjunction with him pitching. So look for that too. Hope maybe we'll have some other stuff on the site too. But yeah, just, we'll do prospects as much as we can, unless the White Sox go on a 20-game winning streak here and get back into the division race. So
could happen. You never know. Tommy Pham, yeah. You know, 3-0. Do you have anything new? I just watched earlier, Aram Layton and Jack McMullen did a mock draft, and they had the White Sox taking Connor Griffin at 5. Do you have anything, any new information, any new thoughts on what's going on in the NCAA right now and prep?
No, I mean, it seems like the White Sox are very willing to take one of the prep hitters like at 5. It's a while still. My guess is there's a college guy or two that they wouldn't pass on. I'm not really privy to that info. I don't know, but I do know that who's the shortstop that you don't like because of the bad flip? Bryce Rainer.
Yeah, Bryce Rainer.
Apparently, he played at NHSI, was awesome. So I think he's, even for everybody, he's like right in that 10-11 range right now. So if that's the White Sox pick at 5, like by the time we get to July, it probably wouldn't be a surprise because he'll be right in those range. They've been in a bunch to see Connor Griffin. I mean, they have the extra pick to play with. It's going to be, I think, one of the more promising days of the year for the White Sox this year. I know, like, I'm a draft nut, but I mean, that's like a weekend where like you can be positive about your team, like regardless of like how bad the big league team is, right? If they do things correctly and the process is good. So yeah, I think we'll hear a bunch. I think mock drafts will have, you know, mostly the same college guys up there at the top, because the class kind of, I think this class is like 8 or 9 deep. And then, you know, everybody's kind of the same for a while after that. So picking 5 is not terrible. We talked a lot about like them falling to 5. They're going to get somebody really good. And as you know, like the baseball draft is all about money. This one won't be any different. With the record bonus pools that I talked about last week, teams are going to be trying to cut deals. We might not know or have much clarity like until the actual event starts, which can be fun too.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's pretty much changed is that Charlie Condon's at the top of every mock draft now. That's about the only thing that's changed.
Yeah, and I don't know that he goes. And like, if you made me guess right now, I would guess that he doesn't go 1 because he doesn't really have much incentive to take a discount from Cleveland. So yeah, we'll see. But he'll go. I mean, he's going high. So, you know, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Colorado, those teams are all up there.
Yeah, probably not going to be the White Sox. There's no way he makes it that far.
That's, yeah, if he did, that's an easy call, I think.
That's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
So that's all I got for the week. So if you're good,
I am all good. Yeah.
All right. Let's run this thing. All right. So my name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. You can find us on Twitter at Future Sox. If you are searching for White Sox minor league highlights, at Future Sox is the place to find them. FutureSox.net, you can find all of our written content. You can find a Patreon link where you can support our content. All of our written content's there. There's all sorts of, you know, mock drafts coming from James. There's breakdowns of the week affiliates. You can also find this podcast there. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock, you can watch us on YouTube and on Twitch, twitch.tv/FutureSox. That's about all we got here. We appreciate you guys for coming and hanging out, 5 minutes early. Yeah, we're not 5 minutes early. We just kind of throw it around here at, whatever time. And we're out of here right around nine. It's not hard nine. So we thank you guys for coming and hanging out. Thank you so much for your time. And, we'll see you guys next week. You guys have a great night and we'll